For value. Yes, you heard correctly. That's corporate speak for improving productivity. Certain corporations will match your volunteer hours with money. That's right. Your volunteer hours translate into dollars so that you've basically doubled your value to KPFT. Yes, time is money. So roll up your sleeves and lend a hand. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
Mike Honig on 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, your community station. My co-host is Andrew Ferguson.
Hi there.
We discuss local, state, national, and international stories most of the time. Depends a little bit on how things run. Do remember that we have elections coming up. Now, I don't think there's anything in Houston, but there are a lot of other municipalities in Harris County as well as the county itself. So do check the county clerk and see if you have anything on the ballot.
Some school
boards.
Yes,
school boards, propositions, many different things. Some primaries, some actual elected positions, bond issues. I mean, it just depends on where you are. Early voting starts April 19th. Election day is May 1st. Make sure you're registered. Make sure you get your mail-in ballots or go in person. Tax day, it's gotten complicated. It's April 12th. Tax day technically is April 15th, unless it's May 17th, unless it's June 15th. Check with your tax preparer. That's your best thing. Just know. Also, if you need to get your car inspected and registered or titled, you have literally until 11:59 p.m. on April 14th to be doing that. I myself today will be getting my cars inspected, and then I'm going to register online. You can register online as long as you have your inspection number and you print out your receipt from your online registration and have that in the car with you. That will get you through until you actually get your sticker in the mail. But just know the state has already said there will be no grace period after April 14th. They feel like they've given us long enough. I don't necessarily agree, but they do. Okay, this is kind of interesting news. I got several articles from communityimpact.com. This one is from communityimpact.com. It's the Bel Air Roundup. The Bel Air City Council has okayed a grant for a backup generator. Bel Air City Council on April 5th included approval of disaster grant funds for a new generator and the temporary suspension of an ordinance to allow for an upcoming dog event at Evelyn's Park. So the bottom line here is that they're going to be buying backup generators for the water system to maintain pressure in the event of a catastrophic statewide freeze-induced power failure. Just in case we have one. I don't know why the city of Houston didn't think of that, because if they had, they could have maintained water pressure. And I don't know if they do or not, but apparently in a lot of the city, they didn't. So water pressure failed, untreated water backed up into the system. We had to wait days for it to be drinkable again without boiling. Backup generators on the water system,
yeah,
an idea whose time has long since come.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I remember you mentioning a few months back that The Houston water system was having problems. And then, of course, we had, there was something about contamination in the water or potential.
Yeah, sometime last year, they had a boil water alert because they felt that some extraneous water had somehow seeped into the system. They weren't sure. They were erring on the side of caution. This was more like a catastrophic, oh, we have absolutely no water pressure in at least half the city. And gee, I guess we don't have any way of maintaining power to maintain pressure. Who could have thunk?
Well, it's perhaps an indication that the city's water infrastructure may need some looking at, and we'll get to that later in the program.
We're going to talk about stuff. This is actually, we're going to try to keep this short because I tried to keep it short so we could pack in a lot of information. So we're just going to roll along. Communityimpact.com. Rice Military Area Senior Housing Project gets backing from the city's Hurricane Harvey grant program. A new 135-unit affordable senior living complex near Washington Avenue will receive some of Harvey's recovery funds. The development will be known as the Heritage Senior Residences, 1 and 2 bedroom units serving seniors 55 and older, and making between 30 and 80% of area median income. It'll be near Center Street in Moy near Washington Avenue, and it is slated to open approximately fall of 2022, so about 18 months. Interesting bit of news here. HISD has renamed a Montrose area Montessori school that was previously or has been named for Woodrow Wilson. Instead, it is going to be renamed for Ella J. Baker, a civil rights leader. The committee opted to recognize Baker, a behind-the-scenes civil rights leader, as an advocate for civil rights and economic justice over 50 years. She provided leadership to the NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So, things happen slowly, but they do happen.
Yeah, a bit of good news. A symbolic change, sure, and not necessarily going to solve any problems. But, hey, a symbol means something. Every symbol means something to somebody. So
I was actually going to say that. Symbols matter.
Yeah, symbols matter.
You know, when it happens during a generation, to us, it's like, oh, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, it feels right, it feels wrong. But you know what? In 10 or 15 years, the kids that are going to the school, this will be all they will know, and this will be the symbolism that they'll have. So, yeah. You know, there's a quote from science fiction writer Jack McDivitt, which I have always remembered, and I haven't seen anywhere else. I happened to be at a panel that he was on, and he made the remark that civilization changes one funeral at a time. I've used that on the show before, but it just continues to be true. Okay, again, communityimpact.com. This is Emma Whalen. She is a very busy journalist for them, and I have to respect that. This is an important story. Houston political groups are looking to November for election on mayoral power limits. A little bit of an awkward title, but basically it's this. Representatives from local political groups ranging from the Houston chapter of the Democratic Socialists to the Harris County Young Republicans have all reached a milestone in their ongoing effort to limit the powers held by the Houston mayor. This is a little bit of a Robert's Rules of Order thing. The organizers, members of the Houston Charter Amendment Coalition, announced that they have passed the 20,000 signature threshold to get a proposed change to the city charter on the ballot for the public vote. Now, keep in mind, when you talk about altering the powers of the mayor, on a national level, that would be as if you were altering the powers of the president, which is something, by the way, we need to probably examine. The petition aims to expand the influence of individual city council members by allowing any of them to place an item on the city council agenda. As proposed, an item must get the support of at least two additional council members to get on the agenda. Currently, under the city's strong mayor form of government, only the mayor has the authority to place agenda items on the ballot. So basically, every mayor is the equivalent of Mitch McConnell, where if he doesn't want to vote in the Senate, it doesn't happen. That's the power that the mayor currently has. So at least on the surface, I don't know exactly how the rules work in city council. In principle, it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
I think that, the idea of sort of democratizing or further democratizing the city meeting agenda is, and the ballots, ballot measures, is a good idea. I find it interesting, if you go to the blog post on thinkwingradio.com and read this story, read our excerpt, and then click through to read the full story, there's a very interesting wide range of groups and individuals who are pushing for this from across the political spectrum. And so I think that sort of would give it more credibility with people who were less familiar with what was going on.
Yeah, because, I agree with that.
Yeah.
For example, Indivisible, the Houston chapter of Indivisible also is on board with this.
Right. As well as some, council members that I've heard are considered a little bit more right-leaning.
Or very right-leaning in some cases. But so I think the point here is that if city council members are going to be representing your district or your city, they should be able to put forward a measure.
I agree.
And then have it debated and voted upon. It just seems like good representative government.
Agreed.
And just so you guys out there know, we have a lot of really long stories that we have digested down into really relatively small bits. So I would suggest going to thinkwingradio.com. If there is anything here that you want more information about, you can go to the show post, you can click on the link, and you can read the complete story as opposed to just our excerpts. This is also communityimpact.com, also hardworking Emma Whalen. A federal judge has approved Houston's $2 billion answer to the Clean Water Act lawsuit. A lawsuit alleging persistent sewage overflows in Houston violates the Clean Water Act and has resulted in a 15-year, $2 billion infrastructure plan approved by a federal judge on April 2nd. The plan is a federal consent decree. The city of Houston is required to pay $4.4 million to both the state and the federal government as part of the settlement costs. Houston Public Works Director Carol Haddock told City Council that in 2019 that water rates would increase by less than 1% as a result of a settlement like this, will not surpass 2%. Representatives of clean water advocacy group Bayou City Waterkeeper, a plaintiff in the suit, says it does not go far enough, this consent decree, to protect the city's most vulnerable residents. The decree, negotiated between local, state, and federal officials, states that the city is obligated to resolve wastewater overflow issues on public property, but not private residential properties. Bayou City Waterkeeper is pushing officials to write a requirement into the consent decree that would reallocate the city's $4.4 million settlement with the state and the feds, and putting that toward residential repair for low-income homeowners. Houston Public Works officials said although the sewage improvement does not apply to overflows on residential properties, it does target public property in low-income communities first. A statement released by Houston Public Works said that they are putting great effort into education and outreach to change behavior and prevent sanitary sewer overflows from occurring to begin with. The city, they say, cannot be held responsible for damages to private properties, in a statement to Community Impact newspaper. I think part of what makes this upsetting is I have lived in Houston since 1978, I believe it is. And as long as I've lived here, there have been stories and complaints about how the city annexes areas and then is supposed to provide them services, police, fire, water, sewer, etc. And very often, especially in the poorer neighborhoods, they just don't seem to get around to it so fast. So this is sort of an extension of a story that I've been hearing for close around 40 years, that low-income neighborhoods simply do not get the kinds of city services they need. Now, there is a certain logic to the public the public government not doing repairs to private property. I mean, it's like if your water pipe breaks and it's between the meter and your house, it's your responsibility. But ultimately, there becomes a question of the common good. And if someone can't afford to do sewer work, there has to be some kind of a recourse. And I think that that's what this is basically about. Andrew?
Yeah. I mean, it really, when I first read this article, the thing that jumped out at me immediately was the $4.4 million settlement to the state of Texas and the federal government. And that just did not make any sense to me. Why is that in there? Because
the cost, essentially, penalties.
But the problem is that the state of Texas and the federal government have not been harmed by Houston's, you know, failure to maintain their system here. The residents have been harmed. If anything, that penalty should have gone to the residents, which is what Bayou City Waterkeeper was saying it should have done.
Well, I mean, there's a logic to the city essentially, in a sense, lost a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. There are court costs associated for the losing party. The federal government had expenses incurred. The state government, I suppose, had expenses incurred. The thing is, what you're doing is taking it from your left pocket and putting it in your right pocket, in a sense. So, I mean, it's a debatable issue, but I'm sympathetic to poor homeowners that cannot afford to do the necessary work.
Yeah, and I mean, this goes very well into my next point is, Houston Public Works saying the city of Houston cannot be responsible for damages to private properties. Well, it cannot because it's chosen not to. Like, this is not something that is set in stone. They could just very easily decide, okay, you know, it's a public sewer system that everybody needs to use to have basic sanitation. It doesn't matter whether it's on private land or public land. Because it's a public system that the taxpayers pay for, we have a responsibility to maintain it everywhere. But in order to save money, presumably, they've decided not to do that. So,
well,
you know,
public is public and private is private, and we're not in a socialist society or a communist society. No, however, to make your point, mm-hmm. all they have to do is pass an act of city council, which
exactly.
is where the petition might come in, that someone can put it forward, and, you know, you can do means testing or whatever they want to do in order to make it happen. It's not impossible. It's just, you know, you have to do stuff to do it.
They don't. Yeah, they don't want to. So.
Okay. So you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM and FM HD 1 in Houston. You can visit my blog at thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Think Wing Radio. You can follow me on Facebook at Think Wing Radio because I have no imagination whatsoever. You can make comments, you can make suggestions, you can provide feedback either on Twitter or on Facebook or on particular blog posts in response to particular shows. And also, Andrew has ways of contacting him.
Yes, if you'd like to direct your frustrations at me, you can find me on Twitter at DominateEYE and spell the same on Tumblr at DominateI.tumblr.com.
And you know, FYI, you can also go to the KPFT website at kpft.org, kpft.org, and you can find out what programs are being broadcast at what times. There is an archive site there where you can listen to shows you've missed. You can even set up podcasts from the archive site or, in some cases, from your podcast app. Mm. So lots to do, lots of places to visit. Okay, next story. And this is one of those stories where I feel like the article titles pretty much say it all. Mm. From the Texas Tribune, Texas has administered 14.3 million vaccine doses and 19.4% of the Texas population has been fully vaccinated. From the WashingtonPost.com, Texas Governor Abbott says the state is, quote, very close to herd immunity. The data tells a different story, like the story that only 19.4% of the population is fully vaccinated. Mm. The two headlines kind of speak for themselves.
Yeah. We have another instance of Greg Abbott, a business-focused governor, I think it's fair to say, wanting to get people shopping as soon as possible. And so, you know, inflates
whether,
the numbers.
Whether they live to tell about it or not.
Exactly.
And then the next story that pretty much the title says it all from the Texas Tribune. Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush is seriously considering a run for attorney general and lays out the case against Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton has basically been indicted for crimes.
Mm.
And do we need to really say any more about why someone should run against Ken Paxton? Now, I would prefer not to vote for George P. Bush, but if it came down to George P. Bush and Ken Paxton, I would vote the Bush.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
Well, it is what you make of it.
Yeah, that's I don't know if I really
You want to
understand.
Just catch your breath on that before you go forward.
I really don't understand. I don't know if I really understand Sophie's Choice, but that feels like a Sophie's Choice scenario. God, do I want Ken Paxton or do I want a Bush, another Bush? Oh, geez. No, I think...
Well, I don't think the Bushes are evil. They just take advice from evil people.
Okay, you're willing to give them more benefit than I am. I think they're
pretty much evil. I am. I mean, I look at the Cheney equation in the George W. Bush situation. George W. Bush was not a good president, but I think he was made ever so much worse by Dick Cheney.
Mm.
But that's just my opinion.
Mm. Well, hey, if it's a Bush versus Paxton election, whoever wins, we lose. Like Alien versus Predator.
Now that's a metaphor.
Mm.
I'm gonna have to think about that, but not on the air.
Okay.
But I like it. I like it. It's interesting. It's thought-provoking. Okay, next story. Not good news. Mm. The Western U.S. may be entering its most severe drought in modern history. Extreme drought across the Western U.S. has become as reliable as a summer afternoon thunderstorm in Florida, and news headlines about drought in the West can seem like a broken record. Some scientists are saying the region is on the precipice of permanent drought because in 2000, the Western U.S. entered the beginning of what scientists call a mega drought, the second worst in 1,200 years, triggered by a combination of a natural dry cycle and human-caused climate change. Soil moisture content is at its lowest levels in at least 120 years. Temperatures across the western U.S. have increased by a few degrees over the past 50 years. The warmer air provides more heat energy to evaporate moisture from vegetation and soil. And as a result, the ground continues to dry out, providing fuel for escalating fire seasons, of which 2020 was the worst in modern history in the West. Now, I mean, there are things that can be done. They're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
There's desalination, which is becoming better with technology. It's becoming more cost effective. And, you know, if it's the only way to get water, there's that.
Mm-hmm.
I've said for at least 20 years that we should look at a national flood control system, kind of like the national interstate system. There are parts of the United States that flood, and there are parts of the United States that have to figure out ways to channel additional water so that they don't flood.
Mm.
Wouldn't it be great if we could take that water and put it where they're having the worst drought in 1,200 years? I mean, there are solutions with varying degrees of practicality and expense. We just need to start them soon enough to make a difference. Andrew?
Well, I think we all remember the wildfires that swept California. God, was that earlier this year? That was last year.
That was the worst fire season on record.
Yeah. And I know somebody on social media who actually lost their home, in those wildfires. And
the photographs literally looked like hell.
Yeah.
I mean, they looked like photos of hell. It was breathtaking.
Yeah. So we know this is a serious problem. You know, any politicians trying to say this is, you know, not an issue or anything, they're just trying to ignore facts at this point. And I think, you know, unfortunately, the only real permanent solution is to, you know, mobilized to tackle climate change, but that's difficult, and that depending
that's the
on
the long-term solution.
That's
in the
long-term
meantime,
solution.
They need to figure out where they can get more water, yeah. how they're going to do it, and how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, depending on who you ask, tackling climate change may involve an overhaul to our entire societal structure. What we do need right now is some kind of stopgap measure to address the drought. And unfortunately, I don't have that. But thankfully, it's not my job to have that. So
and further tacking, further taking water from the water tables is not a long-term solution, because it destroys the water tables for thousands of years, causes subsidence, all kinds of secondary problems.
Right.
I mean, we just need to find a way to create essentially more surface water, whether it's taking it from the east and moving it to the west, or desalination, or some combination of technologies. And, you know, we don't have forever to make that happen. Mm. Next story from CBSNews.com, and this is something you may have been following. Nearly catastrophic Piney Point wastewater leak could irreparably harm neighboring marine life. To sum up, we've got this reservoir that has been carrying contaminated water, water that is high in phosphates, that may have a small amount, relatively speaking, of radioactivity. It's been a problem that has not been dealt with, existing for 20 plus years. Mm. Residents who live in the immediate area are physically safe for the time being, but millions of gallons of water have flowed into the ground and local waterways, and millions more were pumped into Port Manatee, an entrance to Tampa Bay on Florida's west coast, in order to prevent the reservoir from collapsing. From March 26th to April 9th, 237 million gallons of water either leaked or were intentionally discharged from the reservoir. The water was determined, they say, because, you know, Florida. The water was determined to not have harmful levels of radioactive material. Officials have said the water in the reservoir meets marine quality. What else are they likely to say? With the exception of pH, total phosphorus, total nitrogen, and total ammonia nitrogen. Well, as long as it's just that. The nutrients most of concern when it comes to wastewater, which is a combination of salt water from dredge projects and processed water and stormwater, the problems are the nitrogen and the phosphorus, which are essential to plant life, but excessive amounts can destroy ecosystems by essentially draining the oxygen out of them. Mm. This goes back to 1966, when the Borden Chemical Company built the Piney Point Phosphate Processing Plant. They were the first of five owners, several of which were caught dumping waste into nearby Bishop Harbor, a marine estuary that flows into Tampa Bay, and releasing toxic gas into the air. And there's an article that I've linked to that you can see a timeline of the various ownerships and whatnot. Mm. Now, here's the thing. According to ABCActionNews.com, which is a local network, a local station, the company that currently owns Piney Point filed for bankruptcy and was sued by their bank. During a tour of the former Piney Point phosphate mine on Sunday, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis pledged he would hold the property owner financially responsible, but the ABC Action News team uncovered it might be difficult because, you know, they're bankrupt and they don't have the millions of dollars to pay for containment and cleanup. The company's authorized representative is a gentleman named William F. Harley III of Massapequa, New York. He's a hedge fund manager, a CEO of a medical marijuana venture. He's owned multiple Hooters franchises, served as a director and investor of a Fredericks of Hollywood, and he has signed off as the debtor on Chapter 11 bankruptcy petition for HRK Holdings, and I'm guessing he's the H. The thing here is, this does not sound like a guy qualified to run this very complex site. At the time of the bankruptcy filing, the company included an exhibit saying it needed money to repair and monitor the facility, and if the materials are not properly monitored or maintained, or if a gypsum stack failure occurs, gypsum stack basically, the materials may pose a risk to the environment. Now, if you're going to contaminate an area, I mean, this is a common story, where a company will contaminate an area. They will then spin off that property under some kind of a shell company that they no longer have any liability from. So the new company accepts all the liabilities, except they're not really financially equipped to manage it. So you end up where the profit has been private, but the pollution becomes public. And this is simply an example where they have handed this down a chain of ownership. And I think that Andrew would certainly agree with me. I say certainly, but who knows? But I think that Andrew would agree with me when I say that you should not be able to transfer ownership of a polluted site unless the original owner remediates the pollution. You should not be able to hand it off to some chain of ownership where at some point there's no money to do it and it becomes a public problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is a classic of the corporate crime highlight reel.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's I can't take credit for it. It's somebody else's phrase, unfortunately. Okay. But this is a classic example of corporate crime. You know, they pass the buck, whether that's to another shell company or whether they just up and leave the place sometimes. And it eventually falls to the government, whether that's state, local, or federal, to clean it up. And taxpayers end up paying for it. You know, it's something has got to be done about this.
It isn't criminal, but it should be.
Something has got to be done about this. But as it's been going on for decades, unless a lot of people get very angry in a very short amount of time, I don't necessarily think the chances of that happening are too significant, unfortunately.
Okay, we're going to do a break, and then we're actually going to get to international news, something which we have not done for the last couple of weeks because stuff. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on 90.1 KPFT-FM and FM HD1 Houston. We have a lot of complex stories on this show that we're giving very short times to. You can actually read all of these stories, or if there's some particular story that appeals to you, by going to my website, my blog site, thinkwingradio.com. Mm-hmm. It has a show post. You'll have links to stories. You'll have more in-depth information in most cases than we can discuss on the air. And you sometimes have reference links, again, that we don't go into on the air. So there's really a lot to be gained by going to the website. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Think Wing Radio, Facebook, Think Wing Radio, because why not? And KPFT requires community support to provide community radio and community podcasts. Most of us are volunteers. We work hard to try to provide you the kind of news, information, music that you feel you need or want. And sometimes we need money. So a place to do that is to go to kpft.org and click on that donate link. And if you can afford to give us a few dollars, a bunch of dollars, something in between, $5 a month. You know what? That makes a difference. Or a lump sum, $20, $50. Some people have actually brought in Krugerrands. You know, that's happened. But whatever you can afford, whenever you can afford it, is appreciated. And you know what? If you don't have money to give right now, word of mouth counts.
Yeah.
If you can tell people about KPFT, how to receive it, whether it's on a podcast or online, where you can live stream or actually on a radio. You know, word of mouth matters. If there's a particular show that you like and you want to talk about it, that's helpful. If you just want to talk about the station and the variety of things, we have over 100 different show titles, individual show titles. Something for everyone. There's got to be something you like, whether you're left, right, or center. There's something you like. So help us out. Word of mouth, go to kpft.org, click on donate, or you can actually text, and this is a phone number, text to 713-526-5738. I'm suddenly blanking. Thank you. 713-526-5738. Text the word give, and it will take you through a process where you can choose a show you want to support, you can choose an amount you want to contribute, you can choose a thank you gift if you qualify for that. It's a really easy process. 713-526-5738. Text the word give. Okay, this is a story that's literally been going on for about a decade. No resolution in sight. From Reuters, Egypt and Sudan reject Ethiopian proposal for data sharing on their Renaissance Dam, the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, otherwise known as GERD. Egypt and Sudan on Saturday rejected an Ethiopian proposal to share data on their giant hydropower dam on the Blue Nile after negotiations between the three countries that took place in Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of the Congo, this week ended without progress. Ethiopia is pinning its hopes of economic development and power generation on the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which Egypt fears will imperil its supply of water from the Nile. Sudan is also concerned about the impact on its water supply. Cairo and Khartoum maintained they are seeking a legally binding agreement over operation of the dam, which Addis Ababa says is crucial to its economic development. This is a really seriously contentious issue among three countries over a finite source of water. It's getting very contentious because Ethiopia is now at the point in construction where they're beginning to fill the lake behind the dam. And every time they do that, Egypt and Sudan feel that it constrains the water they're getting and the floods they need in order to basically grow food for their people. Right. So this is a life and death issue. And based on what I've been reading over the last few weeks, several months, if they're not careful, they could end up in a military conflict. This would literally be a water war. Andrew?
Well, I think that's obviously not a desirable outcome. The problem is here that I don't think any of the players involved really have. I think they all have good points. You know, they are all concerned about you know, the well-being of their countries, and you know, you can simplify it down to a, you know, good neighborship analogy and everything, but
except that there's finite water and growing populations.
Right. I mean, you know, it's a difficult situation, and I'm not going to pretend to have a solution to it.
Well, if either of us did, we would have been in Kinshasa.
That's true. Yeah. I just know I don't want to see them go to war over this, and I hope that they can sit down and hash it out.
You know, they're in a part of the world that essentially has had a 1,200-year drought.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that the Western U.S. may end up having in common with them.
Yeah, actually, maybe if they can trial some solutions to the drought in the Western U.S., maybe, you know, they could try some of the same stuff over in the Egypt, Sudan, Ethiopia area.
Time for some cooperative technology on water creation, essentially.
Yeah.
The next story is from Bloomberg.com. Brexit Britain's biggest test might be the ability to survive. Leaving the EU has hardened the divisions between the UK's constituent nations, and there's a growing sense that things will come to a head. In the post-Brexit era, a feasibility study is underway of a proposal for a physical link over or under the Irish Sea between Scotland and Northern Ireland as part of the government's review of how to better bind the United Kingdom and its four constituent nations. We very often in the United States don't remember that they're considered four nations. Mm. A more immediate concern may be whether the link could one day connect to independent states that are no longer part of the UK. Scotland will hold elections on May 6th to its parliament that are being cast as a vote on whether the nation has the right or the need for another say on its constitutional future. Polls suggest pro-independent Scottish National Party could sweep to a majority and press its demands for a second referendum on splitting from the UK. In Northern Ireland, grievances are being nursed over its separate treatment from the British mainland in the Brexit deal struck between London and Brussels, and the province's bitterly divided past is resurfacing as a result. Even in Wales, which voted with England in favor of Brexit, support for independence has risen during the coronavirus pandemic. Taken together, it's hard to ignore a growing sense that things are inexorably coming to a head, whether to diminish the union or reinforce it, and that Brexit has lent those forces greater agency. I am not British.
Nope.
I don't have a vote. I don't have a dog in this fight, as they say. But I and a great many others thought that Brexit was really a very, very stupid idea. And as with so many political issues, the Brexiteers won essentially by lying a lot. And you know, they minimized the potential problems and they maximized the advantages that didn't really exist.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrew, you spent time in the UK, so
I lived there during the Brexit campaigning and during the Brexit referendum. I wasn't a citizen, so I didn't have a vote, but I saw the arguments, and you know we have found out basically every argument from the pro leave side was, you know, turned out to be false or not entirely accurate. This mentions a number of you know, issues that I want to comment about. It mentions that the SNP looks to have very good chances of you know, taking the majority in the Scottish Parliament. Yes, the Scottish National Party. And you know, that makes sense to me. I mean, the Scottish National Party has been the dominant force in Scottish politics for a very long time. You know, there is a significant base for independence in that nation, and you know, they had a referendum.
It was close. With UK, it was like what, 51-49, something like that.
Something like that, and that also happened while I was over there. So I've seen two of the UK's most important recent referendums. You know, I almost want to suggest that the other nations in the UK just kick England out because England seems to be causing all the problems.
The thought has occurred to me that, you know, if Northern Ireland united with the Republic of Ireland and if Scotland ended up becoming independent from England, essentially, maybe just, you know, the Scots and the Irish all have grievances that unite them against the English. It might almost make sense for them to form a united republic.
I mean, I bet they could take the Welsh and the Cornish along with them, you know.
This could end up being like one of your major historic events, like comparable to the collapse of the Soviet Union. I will point out, though, that voting for independence is just the smallest, tiniest part of gaining independence, because there would be all kinds of issues about who gets what part of the military and who pays who for the bases that are there and who gets the nuclear weapons. And it would just be, it would take years to resolve the issues involved in independence.
And I'm not even sure that they have definitively answered the question of whether Scotland can break away, of whether any of the constituent countries are able to legally allowed to break away from the UK.
They need to get the permission of Parliament to have the election. But they have on occasion gotten that permission.
Right. I think the referendum that happened was non-binding, though, much as the EU referendum was. Although, you know, that may give some people hope that even though it was a non-binding referendum, the EU referendum was also non-binding, and look what impact it
worked out.
Yeah. The mention of what's happening in Northern Ireland, I have read about this a little bit recently. The loyalists to the British crown are rejecting the Brexit deal. Yeah, because they don't feel like it's giving them enough. And
there's actually a bi-ethnic consensus. Over half of Northern Irish at this point would favor reuniting with the Republic.
Really? Interesting.
So even enough Protestants are suddenly finding that idea appealing, that over half of Northern Irish in the recent poll would be willing to reunite with the Republic of Ireland.
That's very interesting. I mean, you know, again, American, you know, not personally involved, but, you know, this conflict was not just...
Well, Ferguson.
This conflict was not just a religious conflict. It was also, you know, class-based. You know, the, you know, people who were coming over from England and the British Isles.
It was easily identifiable as an interreligious conflict, but it's
right.
more complicated than that.
It's more complicated than that. And I've heard recently that, you know, there has been some rioting in the streets. I've actually heard that police have been cracking down more on the pro-reunification people, though, than the actual than the loyalists, which is interesting. And, you know, that's one person's report, so, you know, we'd have to see if it was verified. But, you know, it's just it's a tense situation, you know, coming back up to the surface after all these years, and it's not being made any better by the Brexit thing. So
yeah. You know, great ideas, man. Okay, we're going to have more international information, news, Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, China, the South China Sea. It only gets more interesting, and of course, that's never good. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM and FM HD1. Do remember that KPFT needs your support in order to continue providing you programming. And support can be telling your friends, telling your neighbors, telling people that you're standing with in line from 3 to 6 feet away. But you can talk a little louder and they can hear you. And let them know about the shows you like, or just the fact that the station is still on the air and we still do new programming. Even though we're not doing it from the building, we still do it. So, you know, this show is timely. Remember that you can listen to KPFT anytime online. You can either listen to live stream, or you can go into the archive at archive.kpft.org. There's also a link from the main page at kpft.org, and you can listen to shows for anywhere from 2 to 8 weeks, depending on the kind of program. You can find out about podcasts. You can listen while you're doing something else. I mean, it's really, really versatile. And also do remember that we rely on your support to stay on the air. You can help support the station by going to kpft.org and clicking on the donate link. Or you can text to 713-526-5738 and text the word give, and that'll take you through an automated process. It's really easy. Andrew?
Remember as well that we've got lots of information on our website, thinkwingradio.com. The show notes, we've got a lot of articles this
week. We've got a lot of stuff.
That we want you to click through and read, because we really have had to make some cuts to fit all this in. So go to the blog post, or go to the blog at thinkwingradio.com, click on show posts and more. That's the blog. The most recent post should be this show post, and as of this, you know, this week. And... you know, while you're there, you know, follow Mike on social media. I think he's got some social media buttons on his website. Think Wing Radio on Twitter, Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on Facebook. And you can find me on social media as well, at Dominate EYE on Twitter, and spell the same, DominateI.tumblr.com.
And it's worth remembering, just sort of to wrap up the break, that I try to focus on stories that maybe aren't getting enough airtime in other media. So it's stuff that isn't repetitious, like you may hear on other channels, other stations, cable, news sites, newspapers, magazines. I really try to talk about stuff that isn't getting a lot of airtime. So it's sometimes worth checking the site just to see what I may have come up with.
Sure.
Okay, the next story is from Al Jazeera. Ukraine turns to Turkey as Russia threatens full-scale war. You know, in previous eras, that would have been like a 5-inch headline. Ukrainian President Zelensky met Turkey's Erdogan at a time of heightened Russia-Ukraine tensions. He visited Istanbul over the weekend to mark the 10th anniversary of his country's strategic partnership with Turkey and to shore up support from his Black Sea neighbor as tensions escalate with Russia over Ukraine's simmering war in the Donbas region. While Turkey spars with the U.S. and Western Europe over the purchase of Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft missiles and the conflict in Syria, the aspiring NATO country of Ukraine has developed strong ties with Ankara, and Turkey is a member of NATO with all its other conflicts. According to the Turkish president, our main goal is that the Black Sea continues to be a sea of peace, tranquility, and cooperation. This is really complicated stuff. You've got Turkey in northern Syria, and they attacked the U.S.'s allies in Syria because we betrayed them. And then you've got Russia that has essentially invaded the Ukraine. And even though Turkey is sort of cooperating with Russia in Syria, they're not happy about the situation in Ukraine because they see the Ukraine as a buffer state. Plus, they share a border across the Black Sea with Ukraine, with Russia, with a couple, three other countries. It's very messy politics. Turkey is also selling weaponry to Ukraine that they're not getting from the U.S. or the EU, in some cases not directly comparable to what is available. They have some unique Turkish systems. And this gets very, very messy. Andrew?
Well, you know, my understanding of the situation is unfortunately limited. As far as I know, Russia does not have a legitimate claim to the Ukraine, in my opinion. But
there was actually, I'll just interrupt here, there was a 1991 treaty that in return for surrendering its nuclear weapons to Russia, that Russia would respect the existing borders of Ukraine, including the fact that Ukraine was in possession of Crimea. They actually had, it was a treaty between Russia, the Ukraine, the United States, and I believe the EU, that Russia just decided to sort of violate.
Interesting. I wonder if they had a justification for that. Perhaps something else.
Russian speakers.
Perhaps they, well, that, and perhaps there was some other violation of the treaty or something they perceived as a violation of the treaty.
No.
But the thing is, in my opinion, Erdogan is an authoritarian dictator as well. So I'm not entirely thrilled to hear that the Ukraine is turning to him. Like you said, this is a messy situation. And like a lot of geopolitics, it can get tense.
So, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Let's hope it doesn't blow up and take us all with it.
Okay, next up. The U.S. and China both deploy aircraft carriers in the South China Sea as tensions simmer. Yeah, good news. From CNN, military activity in the South China Sea spiked over the weekend as a Chinese aircraft carrier entered the region and a U.S. Navy expeditionary strike group wrapped up exercises. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Philippines were preparing for joint drills as the U.S. Secretary of Defense proposed ways to deepen military cooperation between Washington and Manila after China massed vessels in disputed waters. This has been going on for weeks, by the way. China's state-run Global Times on Sunday said the country's first aircraft carrier, the Liaoning, steamed into the South China Sea on Saturday after completing a week of naval exercises around Taiwan. There was no official announcement of Liaoning's position, but the Chinese tabloid cited satellite images first reported by U.S. media outlet The War Zone. The Liaoning's reported arrival in the South China Sea came after a U.S. Navy expeditionary strike group fronted by the aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt and amphibious assault ship USS Macon Island conducted exercises in the South China Sea a day earlier. The two flat-top warships were joined by a cruiser, destroyers, and smaller amphibious ships. Accidental wars have started with less, by the way. Quoting U.S. Navy Captain Stuart Bedeshansky, Commodore of the Amphibious Squadron, "This expeditionary force, which is to say the U.S. and Philippines, fully demonstrates that we maintain a combat-credible force capable of responding to any contingency, deter aggression, and provide regional security and stability in support of a free and open Indo-Pacific." The Global Times quoted a Chinese military expert, forgive pronunciations, Wei Dongzhu, as saying the U.S. Navy exercises were a provocation. Exercises by the Chinese carrier can, quote, establish wider maritime defensive positions, safeguard China's coastal regions, and keep U.S. military activities in check. Now, this is on top of China trying to extend its control to areas that are claimed, arguably, historically, correctly by, in this case, the Philippines. From a story on April 4th, the continued presence of Chinese maritime militias in the area reveals their further intent to occupy areas of what they call the West Philippine Sea, according to the Philippines Defense Secretary. The Chinese boats have been anchored there now for quite a while. They were first claiming it was weather-related. They've started building some structures that they're saying are fishing shacks. The Philippine Air Force has gotten involved in tensions with the Chinese ships. This has been going on for at least a couple of months now. So again, very messy, very complicated, a lot of players, a lot of risk.
I believe there's a section of the South China Sea that is, it's only a few miles wide, I think, that's simultaneously claimed by like six different nations.
Yeah, roughly a half a dozen nations lay claims to parts of the South China Sea that the Chinese lay claim to.
Right. And, you know, it's it's another tense situation. That's, you know, a theme in geopolitics.
Welcome to the multipolar world, if you thought the bipolar world was bad.
Yeah. You know, I think, from the moment that this crisis has started, I have been just generally wary. I mean, I believe that, you know, China is capable of making aggression in this manner. But I don't really trust the government of the Philippines either. I see them as kind of an authoritarian government. So,
Duterte is their Trump.
Right, exactly. And so...
But worse.
But worse. So I really don't think that there's a good way out of the situation, at least not right now. I really hope that nothing comes to blows, but I don't know who, I don't know what I want to happen here. And that's
not
unfortunate.
War.
Yeah. But not war. Oh, definitely. Yeah. That's the only thing I know I don't want to happen. So.
Okay, I think we're out of time.
Mm.
You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 in Houston, your community station. My co-host, extremely, extraordinarily patient editor, is Andrew Ferguson. And we hope you found the show interesting, and we hope you'll join us again next week. Y'all take care.
See you later.
Too late, not while we're living. Let's put our hands out in time. There's got to be a morning after. We're moving closer to the shore. I know we'll be there by tomorrow. And we escape the darkness, we won't be searching anymore. There's got to be a morning after. There's got to be a morning after.
Family Houston is a nonprofit organization that provides mental health counseling for children in the greater Houston area. Family Houston's counseling program helps children manage negative feelings before they interfere with school or lead to risky behaviors. Appointments can be made in English or Spanish by calling 713-861-4849. For more information, email media@familyhouston.org or visit us online at familyhouston.org. KPFT Houston.
One world home for everyone. One dream, one song, one song heard by everyone.